when they knew they were dealing with a potentially bad actor.
Well, David Carroll, you still on Facebook? We have to go.
Yeah.
David Carroll, associate professor at Parsons School of Design. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Limp Wrist. Live Friday, March 23rd at 8 p.m. at the Bossa Nova Ballroom, 722 East Burnside Street in Portland. Limp Wrist, four unruly, lewd queens playing hardcore call for all dykes, rough girls, sissy boys, trans folks, leather teos, fierce queens, punks, the non-defined, and the questioning, to come get loose at their only Northwest show. Also playing are Xylitol from Olympia and Portland's Labinden Toten and Petite. Again, that's Limp Wrist, live Friday, March 23rd at 8 p.m. at the Bossa Nova Ballroom, 722 East Burnside Street in Portland. This is an all-ages show. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Girl.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of He Moves Like the Ocean, a performance, on Monday, March 26th at 7:30 p.m. at Performance Works Northwest in Portland. In this performance, adults take on movements of a child. Three pairs of dancers and musicians will learn and score short clips of the child's movement and then improvise in his style. Again, that's He Moves Like the Ocean, a performance, on Monday, March 26th at 7:30 p.m. at Performance Works Northwest, 4625 Southeast 67th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:01. Coming up next is your Friday evening news.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Pacific Northwest Family Circle holds the Washington County District Attorney's feet to the fire.
Artists are being evicted in our backyard.
And another person has been killed while crossing the street.
Good evening, this is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, March 23rd, 2018. I'm Ruben Lawrence.
And I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. A pedestrian was struck and killed early this morning on Swan Island. The Portland Police Bureau has released few details about the incident. According to a PPB press release, North Precinct officers were called to the intersection of North Basin Avenue and North Emerson Street at 4:21 a.m. When officers arrived, the unnamed victim was already dead. This morning's death marks the ninth pedestrian fatality so far this year and the fifth in March alone. Portland police have also released the name of the man killed while crossing Northeast Sandy Boulevard on Wednesday, Logan Jeffrey Dunlap, a 20-year-old Portlander, died after being struck by a car driven by a 33-year-old Nathaniel Stewart Smith. The KBOO News team again reminds all of our listeners to please slow down and look out for one another.
District attorneys have the power to hold police officers accountable for their actions. Feet to the Fire is a national campaign that is asking local DAs to do just that. They hold monthly protests at county offices around the country to demand that district attorneys act to increase police transparency, accountability, and responsibility. Washington County District Attorney Bob Herman has decided to retire. So, in 2 months, on May 15th, voters will choose either Kevin Barton, a prosecutor, or Max Wall, a defense attorney, to replace him. This morning, Feet to the Fire activists were at the Washington County Courthouse in Hillsborough. The event was organized in part by Northwest Family Circle, a group formed by families whose loved ones have been killed by police. KABU's Jenka Soderberg was at the courthouse this morning. The first person she spoke to was Donna Hayes, the grandmother of 17-year-old Quanis Hayes, who was killed by a Portland police officer last year.
We are here at Washington County Courthouse at the Feet to the Fire, the National Campaign for Police Accountability. Would you like to talk to KABU and tell us why you're out here today for KABU Community Radio?
Yes. We're out here protesting our DA, the DA in Washington County. Well, we know Bob Herman is retiring, so boom, he's out of here. But he's recommending Kevin Bart. And Kevin Bart is endorsed by most of the incorporated cities here in Washington County. That means no accountability for the police. And they do a lot of shooting of people in Washington County, a lot. Whether it's shooting them or killing them, they do a lot.
And what's the district attorney's role in all of that?
He has the most power in the legal system in any state or city or county, because he can say, well, we're going to charge you with this, or we're not going to charge you with this. We got a plea bargain. You can do this. And sometimes they never see a judge because of a district attorney. And our mass incarceration comes from district attorneys.
Now tell us about Max Wall.
Max Wall, we had a meeting with him at our last meeting. And I mean, we listened to him and we liked his platform and the change that he's talking about making. How he's thinking about instead of massing incarceration, thinking of other things to do. Like people with drugs. Come on, let's go into a drug rehab. He's thinking about children. If they, instead of charging them with a Measure 11, look for some type of help for them. I mean, I like the things he said. I don't like what Kevin. Kevin is being endorsed by police. That means no accountability to these police, because you did something for me, now you owe me. And I don't want him. He's just like his other predecessor, Bob Herman, that's retiring. He did the same thing. He had the same group of people that endorsed him, and he didn't do anything.
Now, for people who aren't familiar with Measure 11, that's like a mandatory minimum?
That's the mandatory minimum. It's day for day, minute for minute.
And that's something that the district attorneys are the ones that enforce?
Yes, they pick and choose who do what. That's why we have so many black people in prison, because he chose. That one's going to get Measure 11, and he said that one's not.
And you're out at different courthouses focusing on district attorneys around the area?
Yes, yes. It's Feet to Fire. That's our campaign every month. And it's not just done here. It's done around the country. We do it on the same day around the country. And it was started by Yolanda McNair.
From Chicago.
Uh-huh.
She was killed doing that.
Her daughter was killed by a police officer at a party.
Has there been any responses from any of the district attorneys in any of the places that these protests are taking place?
No, they like pretty much hide and dodge us. So no, And it needs to be. It really do. They need to come out and say, we're going to do this differently. We hear what you're saying. But no, they don't want to do that. They want to keep it up. They want to keep doing what the status quo, the same thing they was doing before.
Anything else that you want to add for our listeners if they want to find out more or get involved in this campaign?
Pacific Northwest Family Circle. Look us up. They can Google us, they can find us, and they'll find out what we're doing and who we are.
And it's the Family Circle started by family members of people who were killed by police?
It was started by Irene Kalanji. Her son was killed. Christopher Kalanji, by the sheriff, Clackamas Sheriff, and it was started by her, and she brought other people in. She brought me in, Shiloh Phelps, her son was killed. He was Bodie Phelps. I'm going to get his name right. Okay.
What a horrible set of circumstances to have to bring a group together.
And And not only just that, we deal with Washington and Oregon, but we have a group that's called Mother for Justice, where we do the whole country, and we get together and we strategize and plan out things, what we can do, and fight together.
My name is Erin Kalunji, and I'm a mother who lost her son January 28, 2016, by Clackamas Sheriff Office kill him during the mental crisis. So, and after this, you know, life coming apart, you lose your child who even don't know what happened. The mother or family getting in the road where they need to decide or leave this or start to fight for something. Because when you go to justice system, and the first step you go to justice system, it was district attorney. And you're starting to learn about this something, and you realize something wrong with our system. When they tell, no, police officer will not be indicted, will not be punishment about this. And I start to thinking how it's work. And I start to thinking about other family, because after this, 5 months later, I hear other story. Gresham police killed Bobby Phelps, 22 years old. And I just feeling I need to find his mother and talk about this, because she probably alone. She does not know what to do as me. So I find the mother and we decide.
Now you're a part of this campaign. What do you see as the end goal? It's getting rid of the district attorneys?
It's not like getting rid of them. And it's like put people who care, who can, you know, be accountable what they are doing. And plus, they need to be human. They need to see, you know, in... not just a case in front of them. They need to be see a person and say, hey, how I can help, not how I can put in prison and how for how long I have put in prison this person. And the first of all, they need to think how I can help, how I can do a choice for this person, to give a choice people, not just, you know, it's case 1, 2, 3. So we are looking for responsible lawyers, civil rights, who can do this job, and we will work with them as a community. We will, you know, connect with them and talk what they did, what they're going to do, what we suggest. We want DA who can come to community and talk, not who can send somebody and say, talk to community, like, I'm sorry, I hear this from Kevin, but it's not work like this. The people is the power, so you need to work with people.
We've been speaking with the mother of Christopher Kalunji here outside of the Washington County Courthouse, the Feet to the Fire protest calling for a change in district attorneys. This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO.
To learn more about the work being done by Pacific Northwest Family Circle, visit www.pnwfamilycircle.org.
Local businesses and artists are what make Portland such a unique and thriving city. Unfortunately, these creators are being evicted from their spaces by developers that only care about the bottom line. In KBOO's own Central Industrial District neighborhood, developers are giving three small businesses, Eberhardt Press, Devout Records, and Printed Matters SP, 2 weeks to vacate their decade-old location without notice. KBOO reporter Miranda Krause interviews the owners and hears their stories.
My name is Chris. I own and operate Printed Matters Screen Printing.
My name is Stevie. I have Devout Records.
My name is Charles. I'm the publisher of Eberhardt Press.
And my name is Nikki. I'm the production assistant at Eberhardt Press.
Printed Matters has been in a building in Southeast Portland since 2007, so about 11 years. And we had a really nice landlord who we got along with really well. And about 3 weeks ago, some out-of-town developers, out-of-state developers came and introduced themselves as the new owners of the building after our landlord passed away. And they led us to believe for about a week and a half, that they would renew our lease. And instead of sending the terms of the lease like they said they would do, they sent a termination letter and gave us 2 to 3 weeks to move out. Yeah, they totally misled us, and all we asked, we sent an email back asking for a month-to-month extension, which was an option in the lease, but up to them if they granted it or not. And their reaction was to have a lawyer write back saying they filed for arbitration for refusing to vacate the premises.
Which is a ridiculously short notice for three businesses to relocate. I mean, you got six people that depend on paying their rent on these businesses. A 90-day notice would be difficult for a lot of places in Portland these days, with rents skyrocketing. And the truth is, there are a few little protections for residents these days, but there's very little protections for small businesses. And what we're witnessing is basically something that's resulting from unrestrained development in Portland, and there's very little holding it back right now.
Has this happened to other companies and businesses in the area?
Yeah, lots of our friends.
Absolutely.
I mean, this whole neighborhood was inspiring. It's just all industry and lots of printers and artists, and it's just slowly what makes Portland so desirable to everyone to move here is now being kicked out, and then it's just this vicious cycle of what people want to come here for is now going to be pushed out, and what else is there, you know?
Yeah, what I find kind of interesting about our situation is that a lot of our friends who are kind of like the artists on the, you know, if you kind of think about the infrastructure of art and makerspaces, that a lot of these artists have already been kicked out. You know, a lot of the studio spaces, the rents rose or the buildings were sold. We know a lot of people who've had to close their businesses just outright because they haven't been able to find other spaces within their rents. We are very fortunate in that our community has kind of come together and we have a potential space. We're not sure that it's going to work necessarily. There's some power issues and the rent is much, much higher. So we're trying to figure out how all of that is going to work. But at least we have a hallway to go to, which is a lot more than a lot of people have been provided. But yeah, I mean, it's like we're kind of at the point where we help facilitate other makers and artists. And now it's at the level where all of this infrastructure that helps all of these other people have their businesses are being wiped out too.
Portland is steadily destroying the thing that they're using to draw people to this city. And, you know, it's ironic because for a while there was a city walking tour that came to our shop every once in a while, about once a week, to see a makerspace that was so appealing to visitors to see. And so it's so ironic that they, on the facade, they embrace what makes Portland different and special, really. And, I mean, well, they're selling it out.
And in addition to the city leading tours through our space to like let potential investors know how cool Portland is and what like an investment it would be a maker in Portland and come do your useful thing, it's like this is also a learning space. This is a community space. Like Stevie's Record Shop is such a community meeting ground for people that like this underground music that you just can't really find anywhere else, you know? And Chris has been letting other screen printers learn on his machines and build up their own capacity. And if they don't have the space or money, they can come in and use his gear to do their large jobs.
And yeah, he was making me screens when I had no equipment to make them, you know? And there's not many people that do that. And Charles has presses that are incredibly rare. I mean, just I don't think people fully get, I mean, there's just not much left like this. And it's just every business that goes under, it's just another hole, you know?
And in our neighborhood, our friends' businesses that have been removed due to development, their buildings sit empty to this day. It's been months or half a year at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are there any ways that folks around here can support you guys, both money-wise and otherwise?
Just supporting small businesses in general is so important. And most of us know that, but it's just needs to be talked about way more, you know? And not just my business or, you know, just everything. Just
which may cost a little more, but that's because of all the development and the increased rent prices.
And the quality.
Yeah, if you don't pay your friends, who will, you know?
We were lucky enough to have a 10-year-old building that our landlord was cool enough that he never jacked the rent up on me. And it was affordable. And we were able to have cheap pricing and do cheap low runs for people because of the low rent. But with the rent being more than double now, those low runs are going to be costly to us.
if you did want to help out with our relocation costs and everything, we'd really appreciate it. Our Kickstarter campaign is online.
You can type into any search engine, help save Eberhardt Press, Printed Matter, and Devout Records, and our Kickstarter will come up. It's been running for a couple of weeks now. Our initial goal was set really, really, really low because it was our do or die number. So you'll see that we have, thanks to our community, met our initial goal of 20,000. But that really just kind of covers straight up moving costs and securing the lease that we need to get. But really, we're kind of being knocked out of production for 3 months. We're actively losing jobs because our clients have tighter deadlines and need to go elsewhere. We have deliverables and things that were contracted that we're trying to push out and get all of that done before we have to move next week. We actually need closer to 50,000 to just make sure that all of our expenses are covered and that we won't go under. But yeah, it's just like there's got to be better, more creative ways of dealing with this. You know, the development's not necessarily going to stop, and we know that. And the rents aren't necessarily going to lower, and we know that. But there's got to be some sort of middle ground between this all or nothing mentality of either everybody gets out and is left to fend for themselves, or, you know, people kind of coming together and finding creative solutions for how this is actually going to work.
This is KBOO Evening News. I'm Miranda Krause.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. At 6, it's Bread and Roses, feminist public affairs programming. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. At 7, Squirrels Know brings you songs to uplift the spirit and untame your mind. For tonight's weather in the Portland metro area, expect a mix of rain and snow and a low of 34. Today in history, in 1857, Fanny Farmer, the mother of level measures, was born. Farmer's Boston Cooking School cookbook introduced standardized measurements, like cups and teaspoons, to home cooking. Her widely popular book also contained descriptions of the chemistry of cooking. Later in her career, Farmer was an advocate of healthy diet, speaking at Harvard Medical School and teaching doctors and nurses how to feed convalescent patients. The quote of the day is from Farmer, who said, quote, "Progress in civilization has been accompanied by progress in cookery," end quote.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture. On today's newscast, a discussion around moving health insurance coverage into tribal hands, an update on a custody battle in Florida, and Navajo leaders are closer to funding for an Amber Alert extension. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke continues opiate addiction meetings in Washington State.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Northern Arapaho Tribe on the Wind River Reservation in Wyoming plans to begin self-insuring its tribal employees, ending its federal employee health benefits program. But as Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports, some say it's not a good time to do that.
Northern Arapaho member Andrea Clifford is the former assistant manager of the Wind River Casino. She says 10 years ago, the casino, which is owned by the Northern Arapaho, attempted self-insuring. Federal law requires health care providers who take Medicare to offer Native Americans lower rates like the ones Medicare offers. But she says the casino ended up in court because private providers argued the law didn't apply to them.
Well, even though you're going to the hospital for, let's say, an MRI, I mean, you get billed for the radiologist portion of that, and they're private. And so we got pushback from them, and they said, no, the law doesn't apply to us.
Clifford says her tribe needs to slow down and get more public input.
Maybe 6 months down the road, or maybe next year, maybe. But I think they still have a lot of groundwork to be doing.
Matt Silverstein is CEO of First Nation Health Insurance, which already works on the Eastern Shoshone's self-insurance program, the other tribe on Wind River Reservation. He says many tribes are moving towards self-insuring.
At all of the tribes across the country that any tribal member thinks of as successful or well-operated, all of them have a self-funded program. Not some of them, all of them.
He says only 3 in 10 Arapaho employees are participating in the federal insurance, one of the lowest rates in the country.
By contrast, the Eastern Shoshone tribe has more than twice as high of a participation rate by their employees, and they're paying a fraction of what the Arapaho are paying.
The Northern Arapaho plan to start self-insuring in April. For National Native News, I'm Melody Edwards in Laramie.
The Miccosukee tribe has returned a newborn baby to her parents. The baby was taken by tribal police over the weekend, just days after birth, at a Florida hospital off the reservation. The Miami Herald reports a tribal hearing was held Thursday, and the court agreed to return the child to Rebecca Sanders and Justin Johnson. Sanders, who's Miccosukee, says the custody battle is with the maternal grandmother. The tribe cites safety concerns for the baby as the reason for the removal. The parents are being accused of domestic violence, but have reportedly denied those allegations. Authorities are investigating what happened in the case of the baby being seized from the hospital. Jurisdiction questions are among those being raised. Navajo leaders are applauding the U.S. Senate's passage of the Ashland Mike Amber Alert and Indian Country Act. If signed into law, it would make tribes eligible for federal grants to help them implement the Amber Alert system. The bill is named after a Navajo girl who was abducted and murdered on the Navajo reservation in 2016. The bill is being sent to President Trump. Navajo leaders say they will urge the president to sign it into law. The Amber Alert legislation was one of 6 bills for Indian Country to clear the Senate this week. Others involve areas in education and economic development. Those bills now go to the House for consideration. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke is continuing to meet with tribes to discuss the Trump administration's plan to address opioid abuse. Zinke was in Washington State Thursday. He met with the Spokane and Colville tribes and is expected to meet next with the Lummi Nation. The Trump administration has announced steps to tackle opioid addiction and overdose in the U.S. through education, treatment, and law enforcement. Zinke met with the tribes in Arizona and Wisconsin earlier this week. Tribal leaders have welcomed the meetings, yet say consultation needs to continue, especially when developing plans for Indian Country. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Quantic Broadcast Corporation. Some have suggested that Donald Trump's congratulatory call to Vladimir Putin was another indication of the continuing bromance between the two and another example of Trump's admiration for authoritarian leaders around the world. KBOO's Ray Bodwell has a different opinion.
I had a call with President Putin and congratulated him on the victory, his electoral victory.
Donald Trump's congratulatory call to Russian President Vladimir Putin is appalling on so many levels, it's hard to know where to start. But we'll begin with the Russian election itself. Before the election, the candidacy of his strongest opponent, lawyer and activist Alexei Navalny, was blocked after Navalny was found guilty of fraud, a charge that the European Court of Human Rights called arbitrary and manifestly unreasonable. During Sunday's voting, blatant displays of ballot stuffing and voter fraud were captured on closed-circuit TV cameras at polling places around the country. And after the election, Russian physicist and poll watcher Sergei Shpilkin estimated that approximately 10.3 million falsified votes were cast for Putin. And if we set aside their bogus election, their international behavior has also been despicable. Some of their recent greatest hits include the annexation of Crimea, the invasion of the Ukraine, the development of an intercontinental nuclear torpedo, the poisoning of 2 Russian citizens on British soil, cyber attacks on American power plants, and multiple instances of election meddling in the U.S. and Europe, including the election that brought Trump to power and the vote in the U.K. that resulted in their exit from the European Union. Clearly, Vladimir Putin does not play well with others, but that didn't stop old buddy Donald Trump from giving him a verbal high five. After Trump announced he had made the call, Arizona Republican John McCain tweeted, quote, "An American president does not lead the free world by congratulating dictators for winning sham elections," end quote. Although at this point, I think it's a pretty safe bet that the free world does not look to us for any kind of leadership. Democrats were generally disparaging of the call, and even many Republicans were critical. But perhaps the most interesting responses came from retired intelligence chiefs and generals. In an interview on MSNBC, former CIA Director John Brennan suggested that Putin may have something on Trump.
I think he's afraid of the president of Russia.
Why?
I think one can speculate as to why, that the Russians may have something on him personally, that they could always roll out and make his life more difficult. The Russians, I think, have had long experience with Mr. Trump and may have things that they could expose.
Something personal, perhaps?
Perhaps.
Michael Hayden, another former CIA director, suggested that Putin plays to Trump's ego.
If I was going to try to work to influence our president, if I were a Russian, I think I'd go to ego. And right. we have seen Putin go out of his way to praise President Trump.
Retired General Barry McCaffrey has no explanation for Trump's refusal to call out Putin and ask the question that many of us ask.
But I cannot understand why President Trump simply won't respond to this guy who is running an active criminal oligarchy in Russia, which is hostile to U.S. and allied interests.
Trump's behavior over time has convinced me that his loyalty to Putin is not a bromance, but a clear indication that the Russian president has something on him. Questionable real estate dealings by the Trump Organization lead me to suspect money laundering, but with a man as amoral and greedy as Trump, the opportunities for entrapment at the hands of Putin are seemingly endless. But I'm optimistic that Robert Mueller's investigation is nearing its conclusion, and we can all look forward to the day that we change the pronoun and begin to chant, "Lock him up." For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Miranda Krause, Ray Bodwell, and Jenka Soderberg. The producer is Jasmine Moneymaker. Our engineer is Jenna Yokoyama.